Now, as always, this time on a Sunday afternoon, we're joined by Donal Fannell of the Come Here To Me blog to talk about one Argentine and his bike. And while my bike might be gathering dust from when I bought it 6 months ago and haven't ridden it since, this is a guy who wrote a fascinating book called Rambles in Erin. Many people might not have heard of it. Tell us what it's about.
It's considered one of the greatest travel books ever written, and it's been gathering dust on my shelf a little bit like your bike, but I took it down again recently and gave it a read and thought it was a perfect subject for a slot. Published in 1907, essentially this book, Rambles in Erin, is the story of this brilliant character, William Bulfin, as he makes his way around Ireland on a bicycle, documenting, you know, everything he sees and everyone he encounters as he goes. But it's this great story that bridges Ireland and Argentina, where Willie Bulfin travels from. And to me, I mean, I think you could actually describe this book fairly as one of the best books you've never read.
Up there with a lot of the books I haven't read, I'd have to say, particularly about cycling, but it's kind of relevant now, particularly as cycling holidays never really more popular.
Yeah, exactly. And Ireland is very much marketed now as a country that you can travel on bicycles. So if it's the Wild Atlantic Way, or if it's the coastline of the east, you know, if the weather is on side, which it very rarely is, there are kind of few things as enjoyable as cycling in Ireland, I think it's fair to say. But like, surprisingly few travel accounts of Ireland on bicycle have ever been penned. But the one that we're talking about today, which is available to read, by the way, online in full on archive.org, is an absolute masterpiece. And I think it's not only one of the greatest Irish travel books ever written, it is one of the greatest travel books. And as I said, it's a story that links Ireland and Argentina. Bulfin was a returning member of the Irish diaspora, and he takes to the roads and the hills in 1902 on this bicycle. And 5 years later, he publishes this extraordinary book.
And the Bulfins left Offaly for Buenos Aires, two places I never actually thought I would compare, to be honest.
They're somewhat different in terms of climate. But I mean, people might be surprised to hear this. Like, there's a massive Irish community in Argentina, historically. It's one of the forgotten Irish diasporas, without a shadow of a doubt. And in the 1880s, the Bulfin family hail from Burr, Offaly, make their way over to Argentina. And then maybe there's one member of the Argentine-Irish diaspora that people might be familiar with, one name that comes to mind, Ernesto Guevara de la Serna Lynch, who's better known to us as Che Guevara. His family had hailed from the west of Ireland. But the Bulfins would play a much more direct role in Irish history. And in Buenos Aires, they really threw themselves into Irish culture. You know, there was the Gaelic League had a branch in Buenos Aires, which is amazing. You know, the GAA had a presence there. There was an Irish nationalist press. Everything was happening. And Willie Bulfin, the man who wrote this great cycling book, his son Eamon, born in Buenos Aires, is the man who raises the tricolour over the GPO in 1916, which is a great pub quiz question, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, who knew a fella from Buenos Aires did that? But, you know, a lovely piece on the Irish in Argentina recently in the Irish Times, Andy Pollock said that by 1917, there were 110,000 Irish people living in Argentina. That's a massive, massive diaspora. And I think when you live in a diaspora community, when you live away from something, your heart grows stronger for it, if you know what I mean. Often we joke that Irish Americans, they're more Irish than the Irish themselves. I think there's something of that happening in the Irish community in Argentina. So Willie Bulfin, you know, though born in Ireland, having spent so long in Argentina, felt that lust, if you will, to return.
And they have been, we so often think of the Americans, we think of the people who've gone elsewhere, but the Argentine Irish have been among the most successful of
they
our
did very well. And what's weird about them is they come from little pockets of Ireland, so they're from the Midlands and Wexford for the most part. And Andy Pollock writes about how they made their money. I mean, they made a lot of money, a lot more than some Irish diaspora communities, in sheep and refrigeration, banking, railways. Like, they knew what they were doing. Argentina, when you think about it, was a country that was Catholic and had a massive agricultural economy. So it made a lot of sense, actually, for Irish people as a site of migration. The climate was something difficult to deal with, but, you know, a lot of cultural things were quite similar, and the Bulfins fit in quite nicely there.
I imagine there might be a large Argentine Wexfordian contingent today then cheering on, watching the hurling semi-final from Buenos Aires.
Very good.
Why did he come back then to Ireland bicycle?
I mean, he writes in his introduction these beautiful words. He says, "All I care," he doesn't feel that the book is quite good. And he says, you know, "All I care to say is that the heart of the writer was in the writing." So it's this great lust, I think, to just come back and see Ireland. And he's like an accidental sociologist, because when you're a travel writer, you become a lot of things, but that's one thing you do become, because not only are you writing about places, you're writing about people. So he captures this great moment of change and transition. And, you know, when you've come back, you know, Ireland is changing. I mean, the Ireland of the early 20th century, the Gaelic revival is underway. So what it means to be Irish is being reinvented. But Ireland also, in other places, in the urban centres, kind of feels like it's losing its sense of Irishness. The world is becoming a much more kind of globalised place. And actually, there's a lot in common between the the land Bulfin knows as home and Ireland. He's surprised how similar people are. But he's on this trusty Wexford-made bicycle. He calls it my Wexford wheel. And he departs on this island-wide trek. And the thing is published in serialised form back in Argentina in a newspaper before it becomes a book. But the language is just beautiful. I mean, he's talking about the summer weather in Ireland, 1902. It's an absolute scorcher. And he says, I was hungry for a feast of the summer glory, and I was filled with a desire to dim the workshop lustre of my brand new Wexford wheel. It was the last day of June, and the weather was perfect. The people along the road said it was shockingly warm, scorching, terrible hot. But after 17 sweltering years of the sunny south, I found it just charming. The first few miles of my trial spin took me down the valley of the Middle Shannon, and I laid my seven blessings on the Irish sunshine, which never blisters, and on the perfumed winds of the Irish summer, which are never laden with flame. What a beautiful way of saying the weather in Ireland is never particularly good. The Irish sunshine, which never blisters, and Irish summers, which are never laden with flame. There's a beautiful poetic way with words in this book, and you follow him on this great journey across Ireland.
And the lovely way that people still talk today, geez, just fierce hot, just blistering hot when there's good drying out. He wasn't really concerned, though, with the cities around Ireland, more so the country life.
That's what's amazing about the book. Often when people came to Ireland in the 19th or early 20th centuries, a lot of big names would have been here. You know, people like Frederick Douglass, the American anti-slavery campaigner, they write about the cities and they're obsessed by the poverty of the cities. And Bulfin just isn't really interested in the urban metropolis at all. You know, he wants to see the countryside. Even in Dublin, you know, he writes about Lucan, where the sheep and cattle were deep in flower-strewn grass on the meadows that knew the Sarsfields before the wild geese flew from Ireland. If you know Lucan today, this massive, expansive suburb, it's difficult to picture that in your head. But, you know, for him, I think he probably felt too much had been written about Dublin, the Georgian architecture and the tenement poverty. And instead, he wanted to write a book about a different Ireland. He wanted to get out there into the countryside and try and capture that. So it's one of the best accounts we have of life in rural Ireland in the early 20th century. And, you know, it takes the eyes of a returning migrant sometimes to capture things like he does.
If he wasn't particularly interested in the likes of Dublin, Belfast actually actively left a bad impression, and maybe unfairly.
Really strangely. I mean, Belfast at this time is a booming city. It's a city that's making linen. It's a city that's building ships. The Titanic is built on the dockyards of Belfast around the time that this book is written. And he's just horrified by Belfast. He writes about it as this kind of sectarian tinderbox. This wonderful line, he says, you can have a broken head after half a dozen words in Belfast if you go the right way about it. But I didn't go there looking for trouble. My visit was a quiet one. I interfered with no wasp's nest. I mean, this idea of Belfast as this, you know, tinderbox of sectarianism, I think was firstly unfair. Belfast is a beautiful city.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you're looking for this Gaelic-ness, you know, you have it there too. Cave Hill, Black Mountain, Bail Ferishta itself. But he comes away from Belfast, I think, whatever romantic Ireland he's trying to find, he doesn't find it there. I just don't think he looked hard enough, to be honest.
That's interesting, the impression of Belfast that maybe a lot of people who haven't visited there do get, and then is dispelled when they get there. But this is one of the things I love about history now. Everything is available online, and this book is no exception.
Yeah, this stunning book is up online for free at archive.org, which is a brilliant resource. They host scanned books from libraries right across the world, and there's several digitized editions of Bulfin's book on there. But I'd encourage listeners to actually go and buy a copy. I mean, I don't think anyone has ever written a travel book as good as this in Ireland. And he died in Ireland in 1910. His son went on to fight in the Easter Rising, and in the aftermath of it was deported to Buenos Aires, which is, I don't think any other rebel had that experience. You know, but I think it's time that we think about the Irish diaspora as something bigger than Birmingham and Boston. You know, Irish immigrants knew sunnier climates than those two places as well. And the Bulfins are a reminder of that.
Yeah, and I don't think being deported to Buenos Aires, there's worse places you could go.
Absolutely. And why not, anyone listening to this with a bicycle, you know, why not try and take Bulfin's journey again? Because I always think when I read this book, it could inspire a similar bicycle holiday. While a lot of Ireland has changed, I mean, Bulfin didn't encounter a single motorway bypass on his journey around Ireland. The hills and the valleys are much the same. So you could actually take the ramble in Erin that Willie Bulfin took as a modern day ramble, if you so choose.
I might dust off my own bike and do the same.